Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tax Crime Junkies. Today we're exploring a fascinating case that has CPAs and citizens scratching their heads to this day. J. Douglas Jennings was a real-life knockoff version of Better Call Saul. He committed embezzlement at the highest degree, and he was sued more than 15 times for professional negligence, 6 times for malpractice, and twice for fraud. Now, he's been adamant about the cases being settled, and despite the lawsuits, has been pulling schemes as the years went by. So much so that even getting disbarred, he was still practicing law. So let's dive in and see just how badly he hurt clients and tarnished the public perception of tax attorneys' images and likeness nationwide. I'm your host, Dominique, and this is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom. Are you excited to get into this one?
Absolutely. This case is bizarre and truly extensive, a ton of detail. It's crazy how far people will go just to cheat their way ahead in their careers and their bank accounts. This guy really had no limit on how far he would go to break the law and hurt others for his own financial gain. He and his wife even got his mother-in-law in on the scheme. There is simply no moral compass for this self-proclaimed quote-unquote expert in tax law. Dom, I'm ready to explore some more and unpack this case.
Yeah, let's get into it. We're going to pop this off by actually getting into hearing from the man himself. Here's how Doug Jennings describes his services.
I have yet to see the individual come into my office that I can't substantially cut their income taxes. We prepare individual tax returns, corporate returns, partnership returns.
I have yet to see. Wow, strong words. I know that I can help most people, Tom, but to say I've never seen anybody that I can't help, that's a pretty bold stretch. We found a Yelp review that raised some red flags on how Jennings was a manipulator and had ethical discrepancies that caused one business owner to run the other way. This person clearly dodged a bullet, but many others got hit along the way. Tom, tell us what these reviews say.
For sure. Our Janet Simpson wrote in 2018 the following. My husband and I are terribly disappointed with the services and ethics of Doug Jennings. He pushed financial products that were not a good fit for us, with assurances of tax savings up to 80% of what we had been paying. We paid several thousand dollars for his services with nothing to show for it. What a mistake. I would not recommend his tax planning and asset protection services. You may want to check his standing with the bar. Karen Van Ness left this Google review in 2017. Short and simple, here's what it said. Google this person, enough said.
Wow. And keep in mind, these reviews are all way after he's been disbarred. So Right. He's not even supposed to be practicing at this time. He's actually already been caught, sued over 15 times, and yet people are still going to him for tax advice.
Well, it tells you how people can be duped so easily. I mean, seriously.
Yes. I love reading Yelp reviews, Tom, because it really does give you mostly an honest insight into people's experiences. Let's talk about it. Tom, when you're meeting with potential new clients, what are some of the things that you do to establish trust with them?
I think it's just starting from the beginning, having an open, honest policy, discussing what you offer, and then having that conversation and learning about the client's needs and wants.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. It's this, especially what we do when you're meeting somebody for the first time, we have to create an environment where they believe what we're saying, because otherwise, especially in the area of tax reduction, it just sounds too good to be true. And so maybe meeting that person where they're at, but
right.
Does that have to be done in the first meeting? can you use that meeting to establish trust first, and then you're able to clearly communicate what needs to happen on the client side of things. But you've got to be able to kind of make that connection first, and they don't know you, we don't know them. I think one of the most jaw-dropping realities about this man's constant accusations and lawsuits is the fact that he boasted that he knew legal loopholes and he ran a so-called faith-based operation.
I had the opportunity to represent 20,000 individuals and families over 40 years. My greatest pleasure comes in changing their life and protecting their hard-earned money.
And my question is, faith in what?
Right.
Perhaps his narcissism caused him to believe in his ability to break the law and evade the law for so many years. Even one of the judges that was working on his case, Judge Curiel, criticized him for getting clients through that religious pitch. And I don't blame him. It's a good old-fashioned wolf in sheep's clothing. And so we put this in context of the need to build trust with our clients. It seems like he's not able to do that in a genuine way, and he has to rely on this trust that comes from someone's faith.
Right. And it just indicates how he was trying to use different levers to manipulate people potentially into some of what of the unethical actions he was taking.
Yeah.
Not only that, but Mr. Jennings once touted actually in a commercial that he managed, quote, one of the nation's leading estate and tax planning law firms, end quote. He appeared on talk shows. He authored books. In his court filings, he claimed that he was one of the most highly regarded and one of the best and most complete estate planning treatises to date, in fact, one of those books. Some referred to him as Uncle Doug. Well, Uncle Doug utilized his reputation and experience to perpetuate a scheme and actually was luring victims into that scheme. We know that for certain.
All right. You and I, Tom, know just how much of a fraud this man was. So let's shift gears here and talk about his crimes and pull up some of the court cases for our listeners to get that same insight that we have on the matter. I'm going to summarize his disbarment case first, because he ultimately was disbarred and then also was charged with white-collar crimes. But I have to say, even I don't always enjoy the court jargon, so I'll do as much as I can in layman terms here. So it says, respondent John Douglas Jennings Jr. is facing a disciplinary proceeding for misconduct involving a client. The case concerns business transactions worth more than $1.4 million. The misconduct charges include violating rules related to improper business transactions with a client and failing to perform legal services competently. That's embarrassing.
Absolutely.
The court has found that Jennings is guilty of all 10 charges of misconduct and recommends that he be disbarred. Of course, we know that just means he loses his license to practice law. And that's a result of the seriousness of the misconduct and other factors.
Well, I think we really need to get into the nitty-gritty of this case, because it's just mind-blowingly absurd. He would attempt to steal this much money from a single client. In 2004, Douglas Jennings was hired by a 78-year-old man named Samuel Robinson to provide legal advice on estate planning and asset protection, right? Makes sense. He's 78, making some plans for the future. At the time, Robinson had not filed an income tax return in many, many years and had a net worth of $10 to $15 million. Jennings worked with Robinson for about 5 years, during which time Robinson was hospitalized multiple times. In 2009, Robinson terminated Jennings' services, and he died 4 years later in 2013. Now, during the time Jennings worked with Robinson, he was the president, owner, and sole controller of a company called La Jolla Equities. That managed and controlled another company called Investments of Jackson Hole. La Jolla Equities was also the general partner of a company called La Jolla Equities Income Fund, in which, get this, Jennings was a limited partner but had full control over all funds transferred to it.
Ooh.
Now, Monique, limited partners usually don't have that level of control, right?
No, they're limited.
Right. The purpose of this income fund was to acquire funds that would be used to pay Jennings' personal and business expenses and to fund his wife's real estate firm.
Wait. This is the client's company? The client's...
supposedly.
Income fund was formed for the purposes to acquire funds to pay his personal and business expenses and fund his wife's business.
It's actually getting a little worse here. In 2005, Robinson inherited about $3 million, which he deposited into Jennings' client trust account. Jennings then entered into several business transactions with Robinson. One of these transactions involved Robinson investing $500,000 into Investments of Jackson Hole with the goal of buying properties in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, improving them, and selling them 5 years later. Well, that didn't happen. What actually did happen, Dominique?
Well, Uncle Doug and his saint wife used some of that money to buy properties in their own names, and then they transferred the deeds to Investments of Jackson Hole without recording the transfers. So this is a story of not having a trail of what you're doing.
Right.
You're saying one thing, but your documentation says something else, and it usually is the reality, right?
Exactly.
Jennings provided his client, Robinson, with a prospectus, and this prospectus basically said that this Investments of Jackson Hole would acquire and sell properties worth around $10 million, and they needed $5 million in capital from investors. But it's not really clear if the company actually raised this amount. And that's the problem when you're running a sham here and you can't prove what you're doing. It's hard to tell the actual story, right? Did they raise the money or not? It's questionable.
Well, they don't want the story to come out, right? Because it could unravel their whole plot.
Yeah. It's seeming to me, you said in the beginning, Robinson comes in because he wants legal advice on estate planning and asset protection. And suddenly now, over these 5 years, now all of a sudden he's like his investment advisor. And they're going in together on investments.
Right. He went from an advisor to a purported partner in the so-called deals.
Yikes. And I guess those investments were Jennings' personal and business expenses.
Yeah, right.
So he did some other stuff, too. Jennings also entered into other business transactions with Robinson, including a $350,000 investment in a company called Tradewinds Development and a $250,000 loan to another company called Big Sky Development. Sounds to me like Jennings really had open spending power on Robinson's checkbook.
Exactly.
And he didn't provide Robinson with any written agreements or default terms for these transactions. There was no collateral for the loan. So this sounds to me like it's the word loan is in air quotes here.
Right.
Jennings also transferred money from Robinson's trust account to a bank account controlled only by himself and his wife, and his client Robinson had no knowledge or consent. So again, to your point, Tom, for obvious reasons, Jennings didn't keep proper records or documentation for these transactions and did not disclose to his client that he had a personal interest in them. And as a result, Robinson lost a significant amount of money and didn't get any financial benefit from the transactions. And Jennings' actions violated several rules of professional conduct and are considered misconduct.
This just smells of elder financial abuse. The client was in his late 70s, early 80s, you know, and folks that are that age are just high risk for people to take financial advantage of them. And it's honestly very, very, very sad.
Yeah. And it sounds like this man really needed somebody. He was in and out of the hospital and
he didn't get it.
Right. And he thought that's what he was hiring. All of these actions, you know, that didn't back up what he's purporting to have happened here, that these were legitimate investments, are just super fishy. And you have to remember that a due on sale clause is part of a mortgage. And that says if the house is sold, the person who owns the mortgage needs to be told about it and give permission for the sale to happen. And so that helps the mortgagee to make sure that they're going to get paid back their money that they loaned. And so in this case, court doesn't believe Uncle Doug is telling the truth, and they were probably right, because he's saying he transferred the ownership of those properties in Wyoming, but there's no proof that he did. And even if he was telling the truth, the court doesn't have anything to base an opinion that Mr. Robinson knew that the ownership was being transferred.
Now, for the true nerds listening, let's break this down a little bit more. What rule was he violating? Well, Rule 3-300 talks about how an attorney must not enter into a business transaction with a client or knowingly acquire an ownership, security, possessory, or other pecuniary interest adverse to a client unless, one, the transaction acquisition and its terms are reasonable and fair to the client and are fully disclosed and transmitted in writing to the client in a reasonably understandable manner, two, the client is advised in writing that the client may seek the advice of an independent lawyer of the client's choice and is given a reasonable opportunity to do so. And three, the client thereafter consents in writing to the terms of the transaction slash acquisition. Again, all three must be met. The burden is on the attorney to demonstrate that the dealings with the client were fair and reasonable. And I think it's fair to say that wasn't the case with Jennings in this situation or in many other situations he found himself in with his own clients.
Yeah, you know, it's not just us that believe that based on the facts, but the state bar alleged that Jennings violated Rule 3-300 by entering into the 2005 Jackson Hole business transaction where he's going into business with a client. And those terms of agreement were not fair, they weren't reasonable, and they were not fully disclosed in writing. Tom, what were some of the other counts that the court got him on?
Well, in another account, it also pertains to the business transaction that occurred on May 18th, 2005, when Uncle Doug's client, Mr. Robinson again, loaned $500,000 to the La Jolla Equities Fund. The terms of this loan were just not fair to Mr. Robinson, as there was no collateral, no promissory note, which is a written promise to pay the loan back, or any default terms. Jennings also did not fully explain the terms of the loan to Mr. Robinson in a way that he could understand. He didn't tell Mr. Robinson he could seek the advice of another lawyer. He did not get Mr. Robinson's written consent for the loan. So therefore, they found that Jennings' actions in this transaction were another violation of this self-dealing rule.
This sounds like he needs a new slogan for his practice. How about this one? J. Douglas Jennings, the attorney who will enter business transactions that will be harmful to your career, livelihood, and mental well-being. Oh, Let's not forget faith-based. We got to sprinkle that in somewhere as well.
I don't see how faith-based these transactions were. But unfortunately, it still gets worse. There were 8 other counts similar in nature. We're not going to overload you with the details, but I think you can see the direction his firm was going.
That's a lot of paper, those charges. Let's look at that paper and see the court document and what it has to say about what transpired with the victim. Of course, he's causing a ton of financial harm to Mr. Robinson, cost him a bunch of time, money, and violated his trust. So I feel like that's a personal violation.
Yes.
And of course, he wasn't in good health and he was old. So he had to hire an attorney and sue Jennings to try to get his money back. You know, when I was reading this case, Tom, my thought was, oh, I hope he passed away without knowing any of this. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. So here he is at the end of his life. He's not feeling good anyway. And now he has to file a lawsuit. And so the court agreed that the financial harm that Jennings caused Mr. Robinson is a factor that should be considered when deciding how to punish him for his misconduct.
Well, he was punished. Jennings was disbarred from the practice of law in California, and his name was stricken from the roll of attorneys.
Well, you'd think that would stop him from pursuing more paths of fraud, but think again. Maybe he was addicted to the fraud. I don't know. He continued to thumb his nose at the law. And Jennings even set up a business doing tax consultancy. He charged one particular client nearly $80,000 in legal services. And he never informed these new clients that he was ineligible to practice law. He kept going business as usual. So same office, same address. He had employees working for him. And despite the punishment, here he is still trying to make a living.
And the disregard for the law and the rules of the practice of law continued. Once Jennings filed for bankruptcy, clearly in a financial dilemma, even more crimes were committed. He was in debt to a lot of people, including Kevin and Debbie McAuley. The family hired Uncle Doug in 2001 to provide tax planning and related services. Now, Jennings did what he did best. He convinced the family, magically, he could reduce their tax liability to our favorite number, zero, if they hired him and adhered to his advice. Now, how did he promise to do this? Forming corporations, forming trusts, pension plans, and of course, the Jennings firm was essential in the preparation and filing of their personal and corporate tax returns as part of this plan. They did business for a few years, and in 2006, the McAuleys terminated Jennings' law firm and retained another law firm. Now, they were unaware of the law firm they hired previously worked with Jennings. The new law firm they hired counseled the McAuleys to move money between various entities and to claim hundreds of thousands of dollars in deductions for so-called consulting services.
Oh, no.
The elaborate setup of this planning was designed specifically so that the McAuleys would and did pay significant legal fees for services. In their lawsuit, the McAuleys alleged that Jennings and the new attorneys consulted other attorneys or accountants and were told that these other individuals' opinions, the tax planning advice, violated not only the Internal Revenue Code, but also the regulations used to implement the code.
So let's put this into perspective. So they're upset with Jennings. They leave and go to another firm, but they were unaware that the new firm that they selected actually had worked with Jennings before. So they're doing the same stuff that Jennings
was doing. It's a web.
And it came out in court that they were aware that what they were doing was not legal.
Of course.
Because they had sought out advice, and the advice they got was don't do it. So this is a 100% just a conflict of interest, because they previously worked together. So they should have even disclosed that, you know.
Right.
The new attorneys actually held that idea that the plan was a potentially a violation of the law. And on top of that, the new attorneys believed that the tax planning strategy from Jennings was not compliant with the codes and the regs, right? And the tax returns relied on that planning completely in order to determine the amount of taxes that the McCauleys owed. So next thing you know, this lawsuit was withdrawn, surprise, surprise, in, wait for it, 2011. This is significant because this is the year that Jennings filed for bankruptcy. So what he does, in my opinion, is he negotiates in bad faith to settle this lawsuit. The McCauleys withdraw the lawsuit, so it never goes to court, right? And then he just turns around and files bankruptcy, and he listed the debt to the McCauleys as a debt to be discharged.
Right.
So that means because of the bankruptcy filing, he wouldn't have to pay them back at all. And of course, now we know after 7 years in the bankruptcy court, it was a very long, drawn out case. There were multiple appeals from Jennings and his team, and it took that long because the bankruptcy court felt that he was being fraudulent. So here he is filing bankruptcy to get out of these debts that he owed. And in fact, he is committing bankruptcy fraud because we learned that Doug hid assets like fancy yachts and expensive silver, and he moved money to the Cayman Islands. And basically, he's just trying to evade his creditors, have those debts legally discharged and wrapped up through bankruptcy. And all of this stuff that he's hiding, Tom, was money that he got through ill-gotten gains, either by directly defrauding his clients like Mr. Robinson, or charging huge tax planning fees and offering fraudulent services, as we saw with the McCauleys.
You know, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say this guy was just simply a crook.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's clear why he filed for bankruptcy to begin with, even though he had the assets. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he most likely filed for bankruptcy. The whole house of cards was coming down at that point.
Exactly.
He's got, and there's lots of other cases, folks. We're not going to bore you with the details. We wanted to pick one that kind of illustrates what was going on here, but he's juggling all of these different lawsuits up from clients that want their money back that he tricked them out of. And between all of those settlements for fraud and malpractice, we haven't yet gotten into real estate fraud, but that was all becoming exposed, and he was just left with no other choice, in his opinion, to file for bankruptcy. But here's the thing, he wasn't willing to trade his wealth to get through the bankruptcy proceeding. You know, bankruptcy is about being able to kind of reset things, take what you do have, settle out with your creditors if it's impossible to ever pay back, and then you basically have to start over. He didn't want to start over. So he filed for relief of the debts, but couldn't even do that on the up and up. And he knew, too, that a legal trustee would be scrutinizing his financials. It's like he just can't help himself, and fraud must run through his veins or something. So towards the end of 2011 in September, Douglas Jennings pleaded guilty to devising a scheme to defraud his unsecured creditors by concealing wealth. And we'll cover more of that in part two of this extensive case that we're covering. But before we wrap up part one, let's drop some gems and give some guidance on how to not end up like Jennings. Because, Tom, as you know, whether you're an enrolled agent or a CPA or an attorney, that license is a badge of honor, and it's got to represent good ethics and integrity in order to do the job correctly. And that is what helps people learn to trust us, right? And so it's up to us. We have to maintain the integrity of our profession and avoid misconduct at all times.
Absolutely. How do you think we can do that?
Well, first of all, super easy. You just follow the rules and regulations of our professional organization.
Right.
And of course, in the case of attorneys and CPAs, we have our rules set by the state in which we practice.
Right.
A little bit different for EAs. You're licensed at a federal level. But whether you're any of these three licenses, our rules include adhering to ethical standards and maintaining the confidentiality of client information.
I agree 100%. What else do you think we should be aware of?
You got to stay current. Stay current on changes to laws, to the regs, and best practices in the field. I think some of this, too, is for our own protection. Cringing, reading back through what Jennings did with Robinson. And I've never entered into any investments or deals or business arrangements with any of my clients.
No.
But if there was some occasion where I had to, let's say, because it was in the best interest of the client, I just feel like I would be overboard on the disclosures and releases and having them sign everything, because I would never want to be in the position where anyone could say or claim that I was doing anything illegal. And so maybe it's the fact that this person was so brazen about not doing any of the requirements that it just kind of paints this picture of a bad actor.
Well, it seems like to me that a lot of Jennings's problems all go back to a lack of client communication, a lack of required disclosures, a lack of disclosing the risk and the positions that he was purporting that they take in tax planning engagements. So it ultimately, I think, is communication.
Right. That's so true, Tom. And unfortunately, life moves pretty fast, is the saying. And as in the tax industry, in particular, we're dealing with these deadlines, and we don't always have the time to properly document that communication. And it may not be in the budget to do so, you know, to really sit and document what's discussed verbally in a meeting, or what's been communicated to you that we rely on for reporting or other things. And that really is the key. And so I would encourage listeners, if you feel like you cannot afford financially to take that much time in terms of documenting those communications, again, it's in your own best interest to do so, because it's always somebody else's word against yours, and the person who's able to prove it wins.
Yes.
And so I think it is there to protect ourselves and that communication, it just works so well. It works for things that are outside of improprieties as well, just to make sure that we have a clear understanding of what our engagement will include, for example. Helps avoid scope creep and being missing profitability because somebody thought that we were going to do something else.
Right. And there's an underlying assumption in everything we're saying about communication that the communications have to be honest, right? And I think you and I and almost hopefully all of our listeners believe that all communication has to be honest. Unfortunately, with Uncle Doug, I felt like when there even were communications, they necessarily weren't honest in nature. I think there was some intent to deceive, unfortunately, in some of those circumstances. And I think with him also, he never acknowledged when there actually was a conflict of interest, which is something any ethical advisor in the tax space has to be really keenly aware of. So, Dominique, conflicts of interest, what does somebody do in that circumstance?
Everything should be in writing, 100%.
Right.
So in this story, there's these new attorneys that are taking over, and Whether they did or did not, it came out in court that they did not disclose that they had previously worked together with Jennings. But if they did, again, the fact that they weren't able to prove that because they did document that means that they lose, right? And so it's that documentation, when we thoroughly document our work and we demonstrate that level of professionalism, that protects ourselves when any accusations or situations arrive where we have to potentially defend ourselves. So it's just smart business.
Absolutely.
Tom, do you ever have occasion to work with clients where you found it especially helpful to be on top of that documentation? You know, where there's it, you can just tell sometimes it appears they're difficult to communicate with, or maybe they're having a really difficult time understanding what you're saying.
Absolutely. Throughout my career, I've had a really wide range of clients that I've worked with. Many of those clients were in the tax controversy space, so we were trying to minimize the damage that could be done to them in an audit, in a collection matter, or we were trying to undo something that they had done to themselves. And in all of those cases, it's essential to have the facts, have the documentation, know the law, how the law applies to those facts, and then act within the boundaries of our professional responsibility at all times.
Yeah, you really can't go wrong with that.
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Take what you learned today and use the truths that hit home to transform the way you do your business. Dominique and I are very grateful you decided to join us today, and we hope you consider subscribing to the show and even share it with some friends who could use a Tax Crime Junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
And wait, before we go, we have to let you know we have one more case to cover in this tax crime story, but we didn't want to rush it all into one. So join us for part two to hear what else Jennings did that makes everybody across the country shake their heads in disgust, whether you're a professional or a taxpayer. Right. I'll give you a hint. He evaded the IRS. He owed $6 million in taxes. He tried to hide a 53-foot yacht worth $150,000. And he even tried to hide antique silver worth over $165,000. And we'll talk about how much time he got in prison and how his wife, Peggy, was involved.
Ouch.
So we'll see you on part two of The Con Artist Television Tax Man of San Diego, all about how one man duped the public and betrayed his clients.
Have a great day, everyone. Yeah.